however, is the principle of one alcoholic relating to another alcoholic. Therefore, only alcoholics actually participate in our meetings. If your primary problem is other than alcoholism, we think it would also be helpful that you contact an anonymous organization which more specifically deals with your addiction. In any case, we hope that what you learn here may be helpful to your recovery and or understanding. Good evening, my name is Andrew, and I'm an alcoholic. Welcome to the Pacific Group of Alcoholics Anonymous.
Hi, Annie, alcoholic. Chapter 5, How It Works. Rarely have we seen a
person of this meeting is 2 10-minute speakers and a main speaker. Our first 10-minute speaker is Brendan T.
Good evening, my name is Brendan and I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date's August 27th, 2015. That's 2015. And my sponsor is Dave W. Yeah, exactly. That's how I feel sometimes. And Pacific Group is my home group. So basically, yeah, I'm going to tell what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. So I'm a local guy. I grew up in Southern California, L.A. my family is relatively normal. I mean, I didn't have anything any abuse or anything I could point to that would make me an alcoholic. My mom got sober when I was 7 years old, and she's sober to this day, so she has about 33 years of sobriety. So I've always been, I've known about AA, and, you know, I could see that it was working in her life. So I basically had to find my own path until I was basically willing to make a change for myself. So, grew up, like I said, relatively kind of shy, quiet kid as I was growing up. I know, big surprise, some of you. I didn't have my first drink until I was 12. Late bloomer. I remember feeling that warmth and kind of just that relaxation. It felt like, you know, my whole life up until that point, I had like a bag over my head. And basically, you know, with that drink, it came off and I could breathe, and like all the worry and anxiety went away. So, you know, I kind of made a mental note. As my mom was sober, we didn't have alcohol in our house. So I kind of gravitated towards smoking weed. As I got to high school, I was diagnosed with a spinal condition, and I was told I had to have 2 18-inch bars screwed into my spine. So I had that when I was 15. And basically, I was told no more sports, even, you know, gym, nothing, basically no contact sports. So I immediately, you know, when I went to high school, I already felt different, and now I knew I was different. So I definitely was beginning more and more to isolate and kind of feel myself separate from others. So as I went through high school, heavy isolator, you know, my parents, my dad's an army, so he had like a wine collection and, you know, liquor. And I basically, over the course of high school, emptied that thing, and they basically had enough of me. They didn't know what to do. They sent me to like a rehab / high school up in Oregon. So I finished my high school up there. All I really learned up there was how to, you know, snort medication and do anything I could to really, you know, get out of myself. From there, I went back to LA, and it was kind of on in my head. You know, I was going to prove to my parents that, you know, that was, you know, a waste of time, and they didn't know what they were talking about. And so I basically got my first DUI when I was 18. We were having a party at our house, and I was doing my version of social drinking, and, you know, I went out for cigarettes and plowed into an elderly couple who were driving home from dinner. Thank God they were not injured. In my sick head, you know, I justified it by saying, oh, they should have signaled. You know, that was the reason why. I could not see my part in it. So going on from there, I still, you know, I knew alcohol was beginning to become a problem for me. I continued down to San Diego State, which is not a, it's a friendly place for an alcoholic. I wound up getting kicked out of school there for bad grades and basically not showing up. I got DUI number 2 down there. I, you know, was under 20, 21. I smashed into a parked car, going out for more. You know, I was drinking 40s in those days, and, you know, I had a car full, and I basically just was drinking by myself, went out for more, was a block from my house, and hit a parked car. So it didn't really get any better from there. You know, I basically, through my 20s, went back to live with my mom, like a real real success story. And as she's going to meetings, I'm basically drinking around her meeting schedule, which is pretty pathetic. So basically, I know she's going to be gone from, you know, 6 to 9, and, you know, so I can go to the liquor store or go out and try to sneak in. So it just continued down that path. You know, I basically started, I was found unconscious a couple of times by my parents at different at my dad's place twice, and I had a 0.43 blood alcohol level and a 0.36 the other time, and you know, I was slowly killing myself. I basically just had no prospects, nothing going on, and you know, my only real pleasure was to drink. You know, I could look forward to drinking. So after one of those days, I decided to actually do something about it, and you know, I went into a program, and at this time, you know, basically I had heard from my mom. You know, she had mentioned to me, I think you have a drinking problem. And when it's your parents, it's hard to actually take that in. And at least it was for me. I took it through a filter. But as I began to go to meetings and talk to other alcoholics and see myself in them, you know, I began to actually begin to have a willingness. So I left that rehab. I got about 22 months, and I slowly, you know, I got the girl, I got my place, life was good, and suddenly the drive from Glendale to Pasadena was too far. So I basically justified that as being, you know, an excuse, and slowly, you know, from having multiple commitments and going to meetings multiple times a week, I was going down to zero. And at that point, you know, I basically had a resentment, and there was no defense against the first drink, and I relapsed. So this time around, what came back, what was different, I got sober in Pasadena. I basically made a decision that, you know, nothing was off the table. You know, I was just going to do whatever was told to me, do that to the best of my ability. And that's what I've done. You know, I basically, when I had 9 months of the sobriety, my sponsor relapsed. And I didn't get another sponsor until, I met Dave, 3 years ago. So from that time I was basically dry. I decided to get engaged, didn't work out cause she saw what it was like living with a dry drunk, so she was out of there. You know, I kind of, luckily, Sean Kay in this group happened to tell me about the Saturday Night Way of Life. I went there. Sunday night, Dave introduced himself, and, you know, we've been doing this ever since. So, what I really want to come down to is, you know, I've tried both court-ordered ways or, you know, the parental suggestion, you know, to get sober. Really, until I made a decision myself, I couldn't stay sober. You know, being in this group, I'm really grateful I fell in here. You know, my sponsor doesn't, you know, take any BS from me. You know, he leads by example. He tells me to do things that he's doing. I have great sponsee brothers that if Dave's not around, I can just look and see what they're doing. So if you're new, I mean, I really welcome you. I encourage you to get a sponsor, listen to that sponsor, and definitely get some phone numbers. Reach out to any one of us. We're happy to help. That's why we're here. With that, I will wrap it up.
Our next 10-minute speaker is Emma S.
Hi, my name is Emma, and I'm an alcoholic. I'd like to thank Mary for asking me to speak. And I'd like to thank Mary and the women that she sponsor for their friendship during the pandemic, because it's really saved me this past year. My sobriety date is October 25th, 1997. So God willing, I'll have 24 years at the end of October. If you're new, welcome. I'm just sharing my experience, strength, and hope. I do not speak for AA. I'm just telling you how doing the program of AA, as suggested by those who have come before me, has provided me the life that I have today. When I got sober, the first week I was sober, I got a copy of the Big Book, and I started reading it, as was suggested, and I got to the bottom of page 31, and I read about all the things that we do to try to control our drinking. And when I got to that paragraph, I really truly believed to my core, even only a week sober, that I was in the right place, because everything described in that paragraph was things that I had done. I probably started drinking around age 15 or 16, probably 10th or 11th grade, and I instantaneously started trying to control my drinking. And I controlled my drinking to the best of my ability until I stopped drinking October 25th, 1997, when I came to my first meeting. The ways that I tried to control my drinking involved switching every kind of mixer that you could have, switching every level of alcohol that you could have. If you can picture this, I was a hardcore punk rocker in the 80s. I shaved my head and I wore X's and wrote HC for hardcore all over my clothes. And listen to Minor Threat, and when they told me that you don't drink and you don't smoke and you I followed that. And you know what? I would go out and I would drink, and the morning after I would say, I fell off the edge last night. And after that period, I started going to a guru in New York named Dr. Atkins, who told me, control your carbohydrates. And so, I was like, well, beer is a carbohydrate, so I shouldn't drink. And so I would try to control my drinking through my food intake. I met a guy in my early 20s while I was drinking, and I figured God had put him in my path because he lived down the street from me, and you don't meet anybody decent that lives down the street from you. So it had to be the man that I was meant to marry. And on one of our early dates, I said to him, hey, I sometimes get violent if I have more than one drink. So when we go out and you see me start to order maybe a second or a third drink, would you mind telling them not to bring it to me? So I used this man to try to control my drinking. None of it worked. None of it worked. One of my stories that is truly pitiful is when I was a teenager, I was headed to France, and I'd already decided that I couldn't drink beer anymore because it made me throw up too much. So I had somebody write a post-it card for me, an index card, that said, si je bois la vodka, j'espère que je ne vomis pas, mais si je bois la bière, c'est certain que je vomis, which means don't give me beer because I'll definitely vomit, but if I drink vodka, I probably won't. So, I go to France prepared. You know, I'm just a drunk. I have no outside issues. I suffer from perfectionism. And there was part of me that was like, well, why should I do something that's illegal when I can drink? So I was not somebody that sought out anything other than alcohol. However, I did pay money for people's IDs when I was underage, and would go to bars and say, no, my name is Susan Eisman, and I'm only 5'1", and I weigh 160 pounds. Really, I do. You know, I was married in my 20s to that man that tried to help me control my drinking, and I should have noticed that there was a problem when he decided to apply to graduate schools all outside of Manhattan. And you know, when he was heading off to graduate school in Philadelphia, and I had just finished graduate school, he said, you know, maybe we should separate. And I had a moment of clarity where I thought, you know what? No, if he's going to move to another state, I should probably start from scratch. And for me personally, I consider my alcoholism like a little Pandora's box that I have to keep a lid on real tight right here. And, you know, when he left, the lid popped off. And it was no different than when I was a teenager. Absolutely no idea, no different. You know, whatever mechanisms I'd had to control my drinking disappeared when that marriage went out the window. And I very soon met a gentleman who lived in California, and it was when you paid a dollar a minute for the internet, you know, so it wasn't really easy to date online. But I got the bright idea to quit my job as an attorney in New York and move cross country to live with someone I didn't know in Los Angeles and start from scratch with no employment opportunities. And what I realized was for the first time I was living with another alcoholic. And we picked our home based on where we could sit in the house and drink and look out the window. And, you know, I would put Cointreau and Grand Marnier in his Christmas stocking. And we had extra shakers in the back seat so that when we went to our favorite Mexican restaurant, we could get a discount on our margaritas. Because if you brought your own shaker, you could get a discount. And, you know, that went south, too. And the one good thing was that I didn't know at the time was that my employer was a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And he thought that I was going to take my life. And he got me some outside help. And she took about a month to just listen to my laundry list of garbage. And then at the end of it, she said, why don't we do an exercise? Tell me every relationship you've been in, where you met them, how long it lasts, the circumstances of its ending, and we'll see where you look at the end of it. And I've come to learn that basically she was doing a makeshift fourth step sex inventory with me. And she looked at it and she said, you know, you're a textbook alcoholic. Why don't you ask your boss to take you to a meeting? And so I did. And he took me to my first meeting, which was the Artists Living in Sobriety meeting in West Hollywood. And I've had constant sobriety since that time. Now, I know a lot now that I didn't know then. You know, I know now why they suggest that you don't get into a relationship when you're new. And the reason is because I didn't, when I met that guy a month in, who I was with for 15 years, and there was some good out of it. But what happened was when the poop hit the fan and he did things that affected him from the waist down when we had 15 years together, I didn't have a circle of women to hold me up. And I was lost in AA at 15 years sober because I didn't have a boat to be in the center of. Even though I had the commitments and I could tell you about the big book and I'd studied the steps and the concepts and the 12 and the traditions and I'd been to conventions, when the bottom fell out, I didn't have a circle of friends to hold me up. And since that time, since 15 years sober, it's been a rebirth in AA. And it took a while to extricate myself from that marriage, but I became the sole parent to our child, who I have as a direct result of this program. When I was 10 years sober, that gentleman and I traveled to China, and we adopted a little girl who it took 2 years to adopt. And but for that marriage, I would not be a mom to this spectacular girl today. But I had to suit up and show up and show her that no matter what, I'm a woman who lives my life through grace and dignity by living this program one day at a time, when her father was gone. And it took 5 years to pull it together, And I redid the steps, and I redid the traditions, and I've been working on the concepts, and I have to tell you that if I hadn't laid that foundation between year 20 and today, when I was hit, as we all were a year ago, with this pandemic, I don't know if I would be standing here today, because I knew to start coming to this meeting, and I knew to start going to Sunday Ohio Street, and I knew to start going to Encino, and I knew to start going to the places that would hold me up, despite the world letting me down outside. So if you're new, please keep coming back. And you're welcome. We're happy to have you here. Thank you for letting me share.
Tonight is Lauren Kay.
Hello, my name is Lauren. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is April 1st of 2012. My sponsor is Sia. She's right over there. And I have a home group in Alcoholics Anonymous. I am so overwhelmed and honored right now. I can't even believe it. If you're new, I hope you stay to get an experience like this. Words cannot describe, but I will do my best. And I got to Alcoholics Anonymous when I was 21, and it literally saved my life. You know, what we do in our meetings and when we share with each other, I get to share my story. I heard some wonderful stories so far, but hopefully that has the power to affect a change, you know, for another person in the room. I'll do my best. But, you know, I just relate so much. I was a child of two sober alcoholics as well, and you know, I had never seen my parents drink. I thought I had all these ideas about what AA was, like people who had thrown in the towel and just given up, didn't want to drink anymore. And that's great for them, you know, but my problems were different. And most of, you know, me falling down and falling into the depths of my alcoholism happened in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. So, you know, I'm so grateful to Mary for asking me to share tonight. She saw most of the worst of it and was there throughout. And, you know, I just, before I came out, I was just thinking about all the men and women in this room no longer with us and in my history that I wouldn't be here today without. You know, I know that in my bones. But like I said, and like we start our stories, right? I discovered alcohol. I discovered it like, you know, just this discovery that changed my life. It was not a beverage for me. It was not like, you know, something I could take or leave alone. It was a solution, you know, within me. It eased this just sense of discontentedness that I had always known and didn't know any different from. And when I discovered alcohol at the average alcoholic age of 12 or 13 and, you know, stored away the idea of like, when things are bad, when I'm uncomfortable, this makes things better. You know, and from there, I just started shaping my life around when I would be able to drink and how I would be able to drink. And it started to feel like I was holding my breath until I could drink again. And I was just waiting, you know, until someone suggested that we get, you know, some alcohol. Someone suggested that we go out driving. You know, that's when we were in high school, that's what we'd go out driving and just get loaded. And, you know, For me as an alcoholic, my experience with it was once I had one, that one demanded another one. Once I had one, if I had planned on having one or two, it would end up way more than that, and I didn't have the ability to control from the very beginning. And that was powerlessness and unmanageability, as our book describes it. But I didn't see it at the time. Me, I thought, you know, I'm deciding to have more. I had said, I only want to smoke a little weed, have some beer. I only want to do a little bit because I got to go to school tomorrow. But then I made the decision that I want more and I want it now. And I did not recognize that. I would listen to people's stories in AA when I first got here or when I first got sent to AA, and I just didn't relate. You know, I could not hear until I could hear, and I had to have some more experience with, you know, powerlessness, unmanageability. And as I was shaping my life around alcohol and around how I could get it, I decided when I barely graduated from high school that I was going to go to art school, because it made sense. Like it kind of, that identity kind of fit in, and nobody was going to really ask me if I was. Testing, testing. There we go. Art school made sense. You know, it fit. It like made this nice little identity for me. I could walk around barefoot. I was going to art school in Seattle. I could walk around and just like, you know, artistic process, you know, just like in my own world. And, you know, accompanied with my alcoholism, this spiritual malady, I like the way the book describes it as a soul sickness, because it really fit for the way I felt. It was just this terrible sense of separation from my fellow man, and I didn't know how to describe it until I heard you guys describe it, that, you know, I just thought I had such complicated problems, such deep feelings, such, you know, deep sadness, and you guys couldn't possibly understand. And that for me made room for drinking. It just, they went together so well. Deep sadness and nobody gets it. Nobody understands me. Nobody's ever loved me right. You know, all of that. I had the perfect childhood. I had nothing to really point my alcoholism at. So that was it. It was just deep sadness and feelings. And, you know, eventually I amazingly got kicked out of art school for selling drugs to the other students. They didn't like that. you know, and that's when, if there's a line in my story, I suppose that's it. That's when the consequences of my drinking started shaping my life. I started making my way in and out of institutions, you know, rehabs, detoxes, psych wards, jails, sober livings, and going to AA meetings. Like, my parents were scrambling, trying to find some way to make it better. And so that's why I say, I guess I did a lot of my drinking and the latter half of it in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, because I didn't want to be sober. I didn't, you know, sobriety was kind of like a punishment. It was like when you've been too bad and you've been caught, then you go get sent to AA. And, you know, I would get loaded after the meeting. I would like store away some of the things I heard. Thankfully, like, some things had penetrated, but I also learned a few tricks. Like, I had heard a speaker share once that to avoid getting pulled over and having a DUI, she stuffed peanuts in the center console of her car while she was driving drunk so that she could stuff a mouthful in and wouldn't smell the alcohol. And so I had peanuts with me in my alcoholic car. That was around the time that I had a job in Irvine that my dad had got me, where I drove to Irvine every day for this job, where I answered the phone in a, it was in a medical office on the days that they were closed, and I basically just made appointments. It was the most, like, just get there and do the job, you know, kind of thing. And I couldn't stay sober, you know, for the drive to Irvine. I couldn't stay sober throughout the day. I had to leave and, you know, go get loaded. I couldn't stay sober for the drive home. So I had my peanuts in the car, and I stole some ammonia packet, you know, that they used to wake people up from fainting, and I'd keep them there in case I passed out on the way home from driving. It is miraculous that I'm alive telling this story right now. I know there's some people out here that it is miraculous indeed that we're all sober and alive. But that's how I was living. And, you know, I would come to AA, I would listen to the big speaker tell their story, and I would think, well, I've never had a DUI. You know, I've never had that consequence. I've never had that circumstance, and feel like I didn't belong. And I so love the format of this meeting and what you guys, you know, have said or what has been laid out of, you know, if these, what is it, if they sound strange or unrelated to your specific problems, take what you can and file the rest for future reference. You know, that's exactly what I did. And when things really started getting bad and, you know, I was a missing person, I was, you know, my relationship with alcohol, it was rooted in dishonesty. It was rooted in secrecy. Once I started really getting going, I realized that I kind of had to just keep some of it private because nobody wants to see that. And so I would get loaded in the bathroom and then I would go out in public and pretend I was sober. You know, I had drug dealers telling me that I should, like, chill out and, like, slow down. You know, like, I didn't have any real friends, but, like, the people in my life were, like, settle down. And, you know, I my parents filed me a missing person, not because I was in danger, I was kidnapped, but because I didn't care to let them know where I was. You know, and our book describes these sprees of drinking. Because it was so quick for me, I didn't recognize that those were sprees and binges and these relapses, this cycle of drinking that was just getting worse and never better. And every time I would, you know, get in trouble and you know, get caught or something would happen, I would get arrested, I would have to go back to rehab, and I would feel, you know, that, okay, something's got to change. And I did not have the desire to stay sober. I didn't find that until I got to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. But I did have that complete deflation of self and have that feeling of, you know, I really should change things. Like, I really should affect some change and tried all the things that I could. You know, I loved what was also shared before me. You know, tried those, here's some of the methods I've tried, smoking weed only, you know, reading the Four Agreements, trying to, you know, meditate, trying to affect some meaningful change in my life, and my willpower just didn't cut it. Surround myself with better people, surround myself with no people, you know. I always wound up in that bathroom by myself, getting loaded around the clock, telling myself that they're all going to be sorry, you know, that they're all going to wish they understood me. And, you know, I was just circling the drain. And what happened for me in March of 2012, I was getting loaded in a Days Inn in Santa Monica, right down the street, Santa Monica somewhere. And I got arrested out of the motel room that I was in and taken one more time to CRDF, Linwood County Jail. And, yep. There we are. And I got sent to the psych dorm of CRDF, which is really not a nice place of the different parts of jail. Like, it's not the ideal place to be in. But, you know, in that pod that I was in, there was a copy of the Big Book that someone from H&I probably brought into that facility and left there. And the first 164 pages were torn out of that book. And so it was the personal stories in the back of the book. And to pass time until my court date, I started reading those stories, and I started relating to not the circumstances. Obviously, these are men and women from 1935 who put their stories in our book. Not, you know, the stockbroker, not the, you know, age, not the, you know, different circumstances, but to that sense of just relief and tranquility that comes at once by taking a drink. And how synthetic that real peace of mind is, you know, how that it's just this chemical effect that I'm looking for, of this sense of satisfaction and not having left the bathroom, but just feeling like everything's been solved and everything's on fire. Like, that is how I drink. I drink for this effect that is completely synthetic, and I am totally separate from my own life. And I related to what these men and women had put in their book, and they described the mania of alcoholism when you wake up, you know, and you got to come up with a plan, you got to figure out how to get money, then you got to figure out how to, you know, get enough of what you need and where to go and how to stay secret and just this insane relationship I have with what, you know, non-alcoholics consider a beverage. You know, not other people, normal people, people that I don't really know that well, like they can take it or leave it alone. And I had to admit that this is abnormal. You know, and then also in those stories and what our book says is that in the stories, each man describes in his own language, and from his own point of view, how he established a relationship with a higher power of his own understanding. And I didn't know anything about that. You know, I had a soul sickness, but I did not know how to, I put anything I could into it, and it did not alleviate that feeling. And so when I got released from the jail, after reading those stories and reading them just as reading material, something changed in my mind. And, you know, they asked me where I wanted to go for my court-mandated, you know, rehab stint. And I had toured the lovely facilities all over Los Angeles County. I had been to, I had my favorites. I had all of these different places that, you know, I knew I could go to. And I had been to this one woman's recovery house 3 times before. And I had left loaded every time. And I asked my public defender if he would call the 80-something-year-old woman who runs that facility and see if Peggy would let me back in there. And I remember telling him, I was like, tell her it's Lauren, tell her it's Lauren. You know, like that's gonna, like I have some in with her. And graciously, this woman who had no reason to let me come stay there once again, no reason whatsoever, let me return to the place I got sober. And she really told me the truth in a way that I needed to hear it, which was that I was the thing that was ending my own life, that I was a liar and a cheat and a thief, that I was suffering from an illness that I was not going to be able to solve on my own power. You know, she put restrictions on what I was allowed to do, and basically all I was allowed to do was cook dinner and call my sponsor. And I'm forever grateful for what she did in my life, because she rearranged the circumstances so that I had a chance. You know, I stayed there for the first 14 months of my sobriety. I met a sponsor who was well qualified to help me. You know, all these people that I look back on my life, and like if someone else, you know, I don't know if I would have, I don't know if I would have made it. I am so grateful for these, you know, legends, as I consider them in my life, that just changed the course of it. Because, you know, the sponsor that I got when I was newly sober, she did not take any of my BS whatsoever. You know, there were a lot of the girls in the facility who, like, had cool sponsors who were, like, doing fun. They were going on, like, hangouts while they would go on pass and go do, like, step work and blow out a candle in the park together. And it was really cute and, like, lovely. My sponsor was, like, get in the truck, you know. And I was reading my 4-step, and we were going to a panel, and we were going to, you know, go drop off food at somebody's house. We were going different places and doing AA work, you know, and reading the 4-step. And, you know, I stayed sober and took the steps with her, and I could not have heard it from anybody else. I don't know if anyone relates to this, but like, I could only hear what she was saying. Like, something clicked in a way that it had never had. She wasn't saying anything new, but I could hear that voice. And you know, I called her every day. I remember just making a decision, like not knowing what I was doing, but knowing I needed to get a sponsor, and saying to myself, okay, I'm just going to tell her everything. Like, I'm just going to tell her all of it, you know, and, like, making a decision to do that. Because I lie when everything's okay. Like, the truth would be okay to say. You know, I lie just for the sake of it. I make stuff up. I had never told the full story to anybody. And not that it was, like, interesting or, like, you know, it wasn't anything to hide, but I just needed to be in control. I needed to control what you thought of me. I needed to, you know, live that lie. And how crazy making that is, to have all these lies going and not be able to let certain groups of people be with each other. It's insane. You know, I'm here tonight with so many people in my life, my mom, my dad, my sponsor, my partner, sponsees, grand sponsees, my cousins here. Like, this is such an honor, and this is all the truth. He's never heard my AA share before, but this is all the truth, you know? And I don't have anything to regret by saying it. You know, there's witnesses in this room, but you know, these legends of my sobriety, Mary M. being one of them. I remember there was a time I was in the hospital, I believe with MRSA, as a direct result of my drinking and the things I was putting in my body, and Mary came to pay a 12-step call on me in my hospital bed, and she started telling her story, and she started telling me, you know, what had happened to her, and I was like, no, la, 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 can't hear, and so at the end of it, I was just like, why is she just talking about her? Like, she's just telling me all these things. You know, I couldn't hear, but I remember that so vividly, of just her bearing everything to me and not having anything to hide from it, you know. I thought for myself that freedom was just doing whatever I wanted to do whenever I wanted to do it and feeling that synthetic sense of relief, you know, whenever I could access. That was real freedom. It's not. Or it's not as I've found it to be. You know, it is that living in the truth and the reality and living the way that people like Mary live, you know, people like I saw Peggy live, you know, getting to be one person in my life, not shape-shifting around. And you know, the steps helped uncover those things in me. Again, not deep, like this is ordinary alcoholism, nothing deep or complicated that like came out of the fourth step, but that experience of reading it in my sponsor's pickup truck. I remember she wore like cowboy boots, she listened to really loud music, she had this crazy pickup truck, and she drove like a maniac, and we would go around LA, and we would do my step work. You know, I'm so grateful to that woman and how she took me through the steps, because she introduced me to the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous and let me have a relationship with it. You know, helped me to find myself in it. Because I used all of these different substances and things and switched my drinking and did all this stuff, I didn't identify with like the ordinary disease of alcoholism when I first came to AA. And she took me to the doctor's opinion and made me look at my drinking. Like every time I drank, even though I had all these excuses for why there were different, it turned the corner, this thing was different, that thing was different, she made me look at, okay, but every time you drank, you know, did you drink more than you intended to? Yeah. You know, did you do things that you regretted? Absolutely. You know, did you say you were, could you control it or not? You know, were you powerless over alcohol and it was making your life unmanageable? And I had to see that I was. You know, I stopped being different and unique and could identify and relate. And that just changed my whole experience of being here. You know, I went through that facility and I started, you know, I like what was shared about, I had my one period of dry sobriety, which was like so far that, you know, after I moved out of that facility, I got my first like apartment and I got my job and I was like getting my life together and I felt like that was worth more, like putting energy and time into than coming to meetings anymore because I was better. You know, things were better. And I could focus on my house and finding a partner and making money. And it was maybe like a 6-month period where I would go to work and then I would go to Home Depot because I had to get plants, because I had to fill my house with plants, because I had to really focus on making my house really nice. And I was just kind of this maniac, and I stopped going to meetings unless I needed to like look good in front of certain people. And I had this whole thing going, and I was just kind of a maniac at the time. And what was so beautiful that pulled me out of that experience was when I left, that woman, Peggy, had given me a commitment to do a book study with the women every Tuesday morning. And I was still making it to that. I was still going to that Tuesday morning book study. I was, you know, a couple months out of the facility I was in, and I would go see Peggy every Tuesday. I would go see the girls. We'd read the steps. And what interceded that moment of, you know, dry sobriety was that I went to the facility and three women asked me to sponsor them. And I had this moment of like, okay, step one, step one, step one, step one. What was step one? You know, and I had to like read the book and go through it with them and you know, got me into this, you know, what was taught to me, which was passing it forward, because that original sponsor of mine, she left AA a little after I was a year sober, and I had that relationship with the book that she had taught me to have. I knew where the doctor's opinion was. I knew where to find step one. You know, I was reading with another alcoholic, and then I met my next sponsor, and, you know, I got to be a part of AA and try to do service to these, you know, men and women who are here who literally saved my life. You know, I think I was like 3 years sober. I got clearance to go into the jails and speak to the men and the women in the different facilities and go to my alma mater, CRDF. And, you know, they let us go in there unsupervised and just talk to them, you know, just talk to them. I get to talk like Mary talked to me. And, you know, some of them are like, what is this chick talking about? You know, what is she doing here? But, you know, I've met some women and some men on the outside who remember me from those panels. And, you know, I sure hope we get to do that again sometime soon. This last year has been difficult, but still feasible. You know, I've known people and seen people over this last year getting sober in these conditions. And, you know, this still works. I met my partner in Alcoholics Anonymous, and we share this life together. We have a home together. We have two, as Sia calls them, fur babies, that I drop off at daycare every morning, and I go to my job every day. And, like, I do not recognize this life. When I'm telling you what it was like, I do not recognize what happened now and what it's like now. And when I was new, I was so insane, I wouldn't have wanted it. You know, I liked the negativity. Alcoholism, for me, it loves that pain, you know. And what happened in my life when I took the steps, it was only taking the steps that really affected that change. I couldn't find that in my own willpower, in my own choices, in my own circumstances, in something outside. I could not find something that powerful. You know, I've been able to find it in reading this book and sitting across the table with another alcoholic and going through, you know, what it's like for all of us or how we relate. You know, you might not relate to my story, you know, and that's okay. We switch speakers, you know, every night of the week. We have somebody else come share. But, you know, what my sponsor had taught me when I was new is that there is something inherently powerful and unique in each of our stories, you know, that I could only hear it from my sponsor, Adrienne. I can only hear her voice. You know, you might be, if you're new in this room, you might be the only voice that somebody else can hear, you know, to wake that up and to say, I relate to that, you know. So I still get to come to meetings, not only because I need them, but because I need to be here. You know, I hope I don't ever get to that point of, you know, when I just moved out of that place I was living, where I'm like, you know what, life's too good, AA is too inconvenient, you know, my life is big now. I could easily tell myself that, and forget what it was like living in a motel room, open sores on my body, missing person report, you know, all of the things that accompany me being, as I called it, free. You know, as I called it, doing whatever I want to do, whenever I want to do it. If you're new, you know, I was never more of a prisoner than when every decision I made was subservient to that substance. How loaded will I be able to be? When will I be able to be loaded again? You know, how do I have to plan it out and map it out? You know, it says in our literature that, you know, oh, God. I'm not a quoter, so I won't quote it, but we all try to find that way where we're exceptions to the rule, therefore non-alcoholic, therefore I don't have to do this stuff, therefore I don't have to go to the meetings anymore, you know, I don't have to help out, I don't have to meditate, I don't have to do all of this. This is all pretty drastic. If I was a non-alcoholic, there might be other things that could help me, but I am an alcoholic. You know, my sponsor showed me how to find myself in this book and diagnose myself and learn that. So because I'm an alcoholic, you know, because I raised my hand and said, I'm Lauren, I'm an alcoholic, and I relate to all of you people, that comes with this way of life. And what I find today is that I would not have it any other way. You know, good, bad, indifferent. You know, the shape that my life has come in sobriety, you know, the things I've been able to do and walk through, good, bad, and indifferent. You know, we had a difficult year, you know, and just my family, like the one of the most difficult situations I had been in my sobriety that I couldn't slap an AA slogan on, that I couldn't just like say, well, at least we're sober, and really feel like that was enough. You know, I was, God, it was 2 years now that, you know, my partner's mom became sick, became sicker, you know, and we had to start hospice in our home. You know, we were doing what we could, but, you know, when what you have power to do doesn't seem like it's enough, and that's the realm of where I don't have any power, you know, because this woman, this huge figure in my life, that impacted me so much, I could not help her. We would go to our meetings and want to say, like, at least we're sober, at least, you know, but at least we can show up, but that didn't seem to make it any better. And, you know, she had taken off work, or she had quit her job to take care of her mom, and I took a leave of absence, and we did, you know, hospice, you know, and she passed away and in the home, and, you know, just this strange period of our lives, you know, but what were the baby steps that walked, I can speak for myself, walked me through that to be able to help her in whatever way I could, was that the same things that have made everything better in my life so far, you know, what can I do, how can I help, you know, the ways that AA has taught me how to move through life, you know, everything based in my experience with Alcoholics Anonymous is how can I be useful today? You know, these commitments that we get, or these, you know, cooking and you know, cleaning up and all of these little things. I was completely useless before I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. I did not have the ability to be of service to anybody. And, you know, you guys taught me one step at a time. My first commitment in AA was to turn on the lights for the meeting, and they called me the creator of light, you know. Turn on the light. Do it really dramatically so everyone notices. But, you know, I felt important in that meeting. Light wouldn't be on if I wasn't there, you know. I felt really important. And, you know, from there, you know, learned to cook when I was in Friendly House, like I said. Learned to bake. You know, that's how my mom and I repaired our relationship, talking about recipes. It wasn't over any, you know, family therapy, although that helped some people. But we just started talking. And, you know, Peggy put me on dinner every night of the week. And when I did not know one more thing to do, when Kaylee's mom was sick and when I didn't have the power to make things better, I made peach cobbler, you know. And I tried to help in whatever way I could, you know. And when she passed away, you know, it's difficult to share about this because there's no, like, silver lining to wrap it up with. But I got to be proud of the way that I was a partner to my partner. And I got to be proud of the way that this, you know, woman who I love so much, that I was able to show her the dignity she deserved. You know, similarly as when Peggy passed away a few years into my sobriety and they asked me to share about how she had impacted my life, I think I just cried the whole time, you know, because it was in a room like this full of so many women whose lives she had touched. And I got to share about how Peggy had helped me, you know, and there were hundreds of people in there who had that same debt that they owed her and felt that. And, you know, what an honor. I could have died in that bathroom. You know, I very easily could have. I could have died in that car. You know, if God was fair and like this was all about odds and probability, like it very well likely could have been. You know, how this alcoholic established a relationship with a power greater than myself is recognizing that fact and then realizing that, you know, maybe there is a reason that this cat has some ninth life. You know, maybe there's a reason that I'm still here. You know, maybe my higher power has something to do with me. And if I can give another woman or another man an ounce of what Peggy gave me, or, you know, any of these legends of my sobriety, you know, I will be forever grateful. You know, I get to travel and do crazy things in AA. You know, I got to speak at a women's convention in Seaside, Oregon, and got to travel to Alaska with my mom to hear her share at another women's convention. You know, all of these places we get to go to. I went to the International in Atlanta, and funnily enough, ran into who else but the girl that I got arrested with in that motel room in downtown Atlanta with 60,000 alcoholics, and me and her run into each other in Starbucks, you know, and I got the opportunity to make amends to her. And we have the same sobriety date. You know, what are the odds or what are the chances? You know, I choose, our book gives us a choice. It says, you know, either God is everything or else he is nothing. What's our choice to be? Today, I choose everything. You know, I choose to believe the God of my understanding has some divine purpose, that we're all here, that we all get to share this thing. You know, I was not a grateful alcoholic. I was not grateful to be sentenced to AA. When I got here, I thought that it was just no more fun ever. You know, 21. Come on, 21. You mean I really can't? And like clutching to things that I never even wanted to do, like have, you know, wine, drink out wine out of a wine glass. I had never done that before. I only drank out of a bottle, and it was just to get it down. I just had these fantasies of like how drinking could one day be. But every day I'm here, I'm more and more convinced that that one idea that I have is not worth it. You know, when we were just that is poison for me. I know that today. You know, I'm so grateful I know that today, and I'm so grateful I get to come to these meetings and be reminded through the lens of your story and your story and your story that for me, it isn't a beverage. You know, for me, that is poison, any one form of it. You know, and I get to live this different life and share what has happened to me, because it is indeed miraculous. And I think that's all I have to share. I want to thank, before I close, Mary again so much, the men and women who founded this group, you know, the legacy of how it has given service to Alcoholics Anonymous, the ripple effect in the chain of one alcoholic to another, because it touches down to me and so many others. So for that, I'm forever grateful. Thank you for letting me share.
Birthdays at this meeting: for every 365 days of continuous sobriety, we give a cake with the appropriate number of candles. And we define sobriety as freedom from alcohol, pills, pot, or anything which affects you from the neck up. If you're a regular attender of this meeting and would like to take a cake with us, please see me at the door before the meeting. And if you're taking a cake tonight, come to the side of the stage and line up in order of sobriety. If you are taking a cake online, email Kimberly K at birthdays@pacificgroupla.org by noon on Wednesday. That's the deadline. Hybrid birthdays will be shown after the in-person birthdays. We have a custom at the Pacific Group of donating $1 for each candle on our cakes. At the end of the year, the candle money is our contribution to AA organizations worldwide. So see my assistants at the door when you sign up to take your cake. Anyway, so let us sing briskly and speak briefly. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear AAs. Happy birthday to you. Keep coming back. So, and if you are participating online, please arrange with our treasurer at treasurer@pacificgroupla.org to pay for your birthday cake. So now our first birthday tonight is for Nicholas for 1 year.
I am Nick. I'm an alcoholic. I'd like to thank Mary for letting me take a cake at this meeting, the Pacific Group of Alcoholics Anonymous, my sponsor Len and Jay, my sponsees, the Fellowship of Men and Women who I trudged this road with, and my beautiful, loving, supporting wife for standing through by me through the thick and the thin. Thank you.
We have another one-year birthday for Joe H.
My name's Joe Hill, and I'm an alcoholic. And I'd like to thank Norman for giving me that cake. Also, my sponsor is Shock, my former sponsor, Steve L., God, Clancy, and all of you. Thank you.
And we have another one-year birthday for Kiko P.
I'm Kiko. I'm an alcoholic.
Kiko!
Oh, man. I wanted to thank my higher power, for sure. And Georgia. Oh, Georgia. Georgia, my sponsor. Marilyn Slater and the Wolf Pack. Woo! Class of 2020. Yeah. Yes. And my parents. no, really, I want to thank my mom and dad. Thank you for being the best examples of the program in the world. I love you guys. And all of you, thank you.
Happy birthday, Kiko. Okay, we have another birthday. We have a two-year birthday for Aaron McTee.
I'd like to thank Jehovah God, Clancy for the sponsor, and Thomas Sales.
Say your name,
Aaron McGee. I'm an alcoholic.
Okay, we have a 6-year birthday for Brendan T.
Brendan, alcoholic. Like to thank Mary for letting me take a cake. Like to thank my higher power, God, my sponsor, Dave W., and all of you.
We have a 7-year birthday for Malik V.
Malik was a alcoholic. I'd like to thank God, my sponsor Norman, Clancy, Pacific Group, AA, the Midnight Mission, Class of 2014.
Our next birthday is for 32 years for Patricia G.
Hi, my name is Patricia and I'm an alcoholic. I'm grateful to my higher power and AG and PG and my sponsor, Hilda, and the whole group of drunks in good orderly direction.
Our next birthday is for 36 years for Nancy J.
Hi, Hi, I'm Nancy. I'm an alcoholic. I want to thank God first and foremost for my sobriety today and the fact that I get to be 36 years sober. I want to thank my ride or die sponsor, Sharon Crane. Thank you so much for that cake. It's the first time in 2 years we got to do that. That feels good. Thank you, Clancy, for the structure of the group. Thank you, Mary, for allowing me to take a cake here tonight. And thank you for my AA sisters. Woo! And class of 85. My kids. And thank you all. I appreciate your help. Thank you.
Our next birthday is for 37 years for John K.
John, alcoholic. Thank you, God. Alcoholics Anonymous, a Pacific Group, Clancy. Tom B. for his sponsorship. Vince Y. for his sponsorship before that. Shout out to Jerome B., the class of 84. We shared a watch and this birthday for many years. I want to thank our speaker tonight for giving me the cake, because she's one of my two daughters of dignity and grace, and I owe them and the way that they relate to people to the head cake lady who, if she doesn't divorce me during the next 4 weeks, will be married 34 years. So thank you very much.
Our next birthday is for 46 years for former Secretary Pat Y.
Hi, everybody. Pat Yo, alcoholic. I'd like to thank Kenna for giving me that cake. One of the speakers earlier referenced the circle of friends, and Kenna has certainly been that to me, you know. I would like to thank my sponsor, Peg Martin in Nebraska, the women I sponsor. An enthusiastic group we are. I love the Pacific Group. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank you all.
And our last birthday is for 48 years for Tom K.
Hi, I'm Tom Kirkaby. I'm an alcoholic. I would like to thank a kind and loving God for my sobriety, and also my current sponsor, Russ C., who lives in Pennsylvania. I want to thank John for giving me my cake, and especially Clancy, who changed my life and was the biggest influence I've ever had in my life and taught me how to be of service to other people by his example. And also like to thank the men I sponsor and the ones I used to sponsor. And my lovely, beautiful wife. Thank you very much.
Okay, we have some announcements.